This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It is Saturday. It is Saturday today, and this is the last day of my work week this week, and it is 10 till 11 at night. Things got a little bit interesting at work at my major client. I had built a web store for my major client that was supposed to be one of those, we'll just use it for a couple of years and then we'll buy a professional package and go on. That was in 1999 when we put up the web store. And it has been useful enough for them that they've kept it going for quite a while. And I had long ago handed off maintenance to other parties on it. And we had discussed many potentials as far as upgrading the web store and enhancing it. But it always seemed like it was going to get replaced with something else. And it never did get replaced with something else. Well, it had a little problem on Thursday, and it required all hands on deck, and we had to basically rewrite a whole bunch of code. So, I and several of the other programmers, the head of systems development, there's like a support section in the programmers, and there's a development section in the programmers. And the guy who's the head of the development section, he and I put in 17 hours on Thursday. We put in 17 hours yesterday. We're actually finishing up early today. We only put in 13 hours. Well, 11 hours today. So that all adds up somewhere around 45 hours or so. But, you know, that's okay. We aren't quite done, but we certainly see daylight now, which is really good. Things are settling in, things are feeling stable, and we think we have made a lot of the changes that we need to make, and, we're having a scan done this evening where we will see what the scan turns up in terms of vulnerabilities on the site. So it will be very interesting to see how that turns out. Because of that, really didn't get much writing done this week. But that's okay. I've been pondering it. And I kind of know what I'm supposed to do in the next section. And in fact, it might guide me for the rest of the book. I think I mentioned last week that I'm in the process of trying to feel my way to the end of this book. And I think I kind of know what it is now. And that is that when you come to God, I talked in Wanting and Waiting about the fact that you can either come to God wanting something, or you can come to God to say, how can I serve you? How can I wait on you? And I think in this book I'm going to be responding, or talking about how people respond to God's invitation. That some people respond to God's invitation out of fear. And some people respond, I need to blow my nose one moment, respond to God's invitation out of love. And so it's going to be interesting to kind of work that in, see how that all works out. But I think that's going to, excuse me, I'm sorry, it is almost 11 o'clock at night for me, so I may be yawning a little bit as we go home. It'll be very interesting to see. And it's the other thing that was interesting about this whole saga with, you know, needing an all hands on deck and to code like crazy, was it wasn't too long ago when I was reviewing what I had already written on book four of Grumpy Old Prophets. And one of the things that I had written was a modified speech that Jesus was making,
where he was going through
my kind of interpretation of the Beatitudes. And at one point, as he does in the Beatitudes, when he talks about don't worry, the way I kind of rephrased that was, don't be concerned about what you eat, what you wear, where you're going to sleep. I rose from the dead. I'll take care of you. So, you know, that was very helpful while we were in the midst of all this. It was fine. You know, we get in, do what we can do, you stay calm, and we'll see how it all turns out. The end of this story is not finished. But, you know, we're doing what we can do, and we'll see what people say, and then we'll go from there. So it will be fine. Let's see, in other news, last weekend was fun. I had mentioned last week that we were going down for a wedding for my wife's nephew, younger nephew. She has an older nephew as well. And so we went down for the wedding. I sang Ave Maria in Latin. It was funny because I'd practice and practice and practice and practice. And I go and I put my two pieces of paper down and before the wedding, got everything arranged so my music was all set. And I get up and I, you know, sing my solemn Ave Maria. You know, do that whole thing. And I'm halfway through what I think is the first verse when I notice that, in fact, I'm singing the second verse as the first verse. Ah! But, of course, I just keep singing. And then I sing the first verse. I had already decided if anybody kind of asked me why I had done that, I would just tell them, well, I really like the first verse better, so I wanted to save that. But the truth was, I just got my two pieces of paper wrong, and I was just singing what was on the page. So, but then we sang a song for their unity candle, and people liked it enough that we actually had a young lady came and asked me, excuse me, what's that song you did? And I said, well, it's called Together. I said, in fact, you can have the music, because we had a copy of the music. And so I got her that so she could, because I had the impression that maybe she was looking at a wedding, possibly. Or she knew someone. Maybe she knew someone who was looking at a wedding. So that was fun. We did make the trip in a couple of days. It was very warm. Clara did really, really well because we had her in the car every day for the shortest amount of time was like an hour and a half, and the longest amount of time was 4.5 hours. And so, but coming back then, we split the trip up to where we drove from Lawton, Oklahoma up to Tulsa, and then we spent the night in Tulsa. And then Sunday morning, we went to the aquarium, one of the aquariums, I guess the aquarium in Tulsa. And it was a nice little aquarium. It was fine. It was small enough that it was good because it gave us about an hour and a half to kind of see what we wanted to see. And Clara seemed to really enjoy that. She's a little over 2 years old now, and she seemed to really like it. So that was good. That was good. We had fun with her. And
excuse me.
My wife, Grammy, she's called, and Clara calls me Poppy. Grammy, she just said at one point, she said, this is what I've been dreaming about, you know, having a little granddaughter I can take around and show things like this and experience that new joy of discovery. And so she really enjoyed doing that with Clara. So it was good all around. We had a really, really nice time. The only sad part about it all was that our son-in-law couldn't come along because he was actually preaching at church and had several activities. So, anyways, that's that. In contrast with all that love and smiles and marriage and wonder, I had seen advertisements for a movie for several weeks. I had seen the trailer for it, and I thought, oh, well, that looks moderately interesting. But I usually, on Wednesdays, go ahead and rent a movie because I'm going home to do finances and get caught up on emails for, you know, one of the websites that I have. And so I was just kind of looking for some background noise. So I thought, well, okay, you know, I'll rent it. I already, when I saw the trailers for it, I thought, oh, here we go. But I thought, well, I'll rent it. I'll just see what this is like. And actually, I'm glad I did, because, excuse me, as I was watching it, I was thinking, So then, of course, it's based on a true story, so as is my custom, I went out to the internet to take a look and find out, how much of it was true, what was people's reaction. It's pretty interesting. And then the more I read all that, I was like, yeah, okay, we got to do this for the podcast. The movie was Machine Gun Preacher. And the short synopsis is, there's this biker drug addict guy who got married and whose wife found Jesus, and then through a series of events, he came to Jesus, and then decided he would go overseas to help out on a missions trip. He did. He actually made his way up into Somalia, saw some of the things that were going on in Somalia. He decided he was going to help. So he went over and built an orphanage in Somalia near some unrest. And so he was helping kids and things, but then kind of through the process of things, decided that he was going to help even more by, you know, carrying around guns and hunting down these people who were hurting people. And in fact, his whole mission in life, when you read his quotes and things, I mean, one of the things he feels like he's supposed to do is he's supposed to actually kill the rebel leader who is causing these atrocities. Make no mistake about it, this rebel leader is causing atrocities. It's in Sudan, and I can't even see my notes because it's so late at night. And I think I would be a bit concerned about even looking at my notes, because at this point, I'm just kind of trying to get home. And I don't need any distractions with as much as we've been working over the last few days. The rebel leader's name is Kony. He's been in the news because there was a documentary done on some of the people who have experienced terrible things at the hand of this man's troops. And make no mistake, just horrific things. Amputations, mutilations, rapes, murder, and just horrific things. So this guy's response, this machine gun preacher's response, is that he's going to go out there and hunt this guy down and kill him. You know, it's kind of a problem. As I've said many, 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 many times on this podcast, everybody gets a chance to make their own decisions in life. If this guy decides that this is the best way that he can spend his life is to hunt this guy down and kill him, that's his decision. he also bears the consequences of that decision, even though he may not understand what all the ramifications are of that decision. Even though he may be deceived about what the ramifications may be of that decision. But he still has the right to make his own decisions in life. So if this machine gun preacher wants to dedicate his life to hunting people down, that's his decision. There are some principles, though, in life. And that is, in my opinion, each of us are at war internally. It is a war between flesh and spirit, and the sole objective of our flesh is to destroy us, to plan, to ensnare, to lay traps, to deceive, to cause us to embrace destruction when we should be embracing life. And it will use whatever trickery it can, whatever false nobility, to deceive us into thinking that our cause is just. Unfortunately, when you buy into that type of mentality, and when you begin to think that all that's important is achieving an end, and what you do from a moment by moment to day by day basis is really not that important, the flesh can then leverage that into getting you to manifest more destructive behaviors and then excusing yourself constantly from those behaviors. And so what happens is when you take it upon yourself to ignore the whispers that are coming from your spirit, you take it upon yourself to ignore what Jesus explicitly advised us to do, such as love your enemies. And by ignoring all that, you then begin to manifest fleshly behaviors. The sad fact is that flesh breeds flesh. The happy fact is that spirit breeds spirit. So if you follow the Spirit, you engender more activity of the Spirit in your life. If you follow the flesh, you engender more fleshly activity. So, I would feel fairly confident in saying that if you've made it your life's goal to hunt someone down and kill them because you have judged them and determined that they don't deserve to live, that judgment, that condemnation is an attitude of the flesh. Killing people is flesh. Doesn't matter if you feel righteous and justified in doing it. Killing people is a fleshly activity. What I would then expect to happen because of that is that the flesh would grow stronger in that person. And what's interesting is when you read the articles, there's one article in particular where there's a reporter who went over to Sudan to meet with this machine gun preacher, who is an American. I don't know if I mentioned that, but was an American here in the States and then went over to Somalia. He just reported some of the incidences that he saw, and one incident I thought was very telling. They were coming back from somewhere, and he noticed a man and his wife and child along the road. And the child was ill, and they stopped, and so he suggested to the man, I'm going to get my mail. He suggested to the man that they take the child to help get some medical attention for the child, and the father deferred and said, no, I don't think we'll do that. And this machine gun preacher started insisting and then basically told the man, I should just kill you right now. I should just beat you up for not letting us help your child. And finally the man relented because, you know, this person is belligerently in his face and bullying him into relenting. The child did recover, and it's very possible that the machine guns preacher's axe, I'm backing into my garage, it's very possible that his axe saved the child's life. However, that sort of overt fleshly behavior just breeds more fleshly behavior. And when the reporter asked the machine gun preacher about this afterwards, how he had treated this father, the machine gun preacher's attitude. Hang on, let me find my notes. I am home. He said, a flash of rage, a look of rage flashes in the machine gun preacher's eyes. I ought to beat you right here. You know that, he yells. What kind of father are you? You're not serious about your children, blah, 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 blah. Okay. The child recovers. He then, the reporter says, I remember once asking the machine gun preacher whether any villagers had ever declined his offer to take their children or whether he had ever acted, had taken any against their will. He erupted angrily, quote, you know what? I don't have time to be distracted by this sort of interrogation. In other words, don't challenge me. I know best. This is not going to end well. It's just not going to end well. And it's interesting because the reporter asked him, well, what are you going to do after you take out this warlord? And he says the machine gun preacher takes the comb from the back pocket and begins running it through his bushy mustache. At last, he breaks the silence and tells me that he has always wanted to hunt pedophiles. Some behavior is so wrong, he says, that doing nothing to stop those engaging in it is an evil in itself. Quote, there are people who deserve to die, end quote, he says, and a wide grin stretches across his face. Okay. Flesh breeds flesh. There will always be people with a wide variety of opinions about how they conduct themselves and what they're supposed to be doing in life. But this I know for certain. If you engage in behavior that is fleshly behavior, if you engage in behavior that is destructive, that kills and steals and destroys, that behavior will eventually turn on you and turn you into something that will be killed or stolen from or destroyed. Because flesh breeds flesh, and spirit breeds spirit. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.